This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History. From memes to movements, see how this powerful online community shapes culture and society. Black Twitter, A People's History, premieres May 9th, streaming on Hulu.
Donald Trump is the next president of the United States. I'm Gene Demby.
And I'm Shireen Marisol Meraji. And this is The Twilight Zone, the post-election episode, also known as Code Switch. Gene, how do you feel right now?
A little disoriented. I think a lot of us woke up on November 5th, 2008, thinking, oh, wow, this country... Maybe some of my premises about the way this country works and its ability to grapple with these issues of race, maybe I was being too pessimistic about them. Maybe I didn't know this country as well as I thought I did, right?
Because we had elected our first black president.
Right. I think a lot of folks out there did not feel that way, although they felt something really similar. They woke up to a country that they did not recognize and said, maybe I don't know this country as well as I thought I did. And so now, you know, I think we're dealing with the pendulum swinging the other way, in which those people, I guess... got to remake the country in their image in some ways. So, yeah, that's how I'm feeling. How are you doing, sis?
Unsettled. Unsettled because a man who called Mexican immigrants rapists, a man who wants to build a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border and make Mexico pay for it, a man who said he'd ban Muslims from coming into the country, he's about to be our new commander-in-chief. So I guess the word is unsettled.
Unsettled. That's a good, strong word.
Is it strong? It feels a little mushy to me, but you know, what can you do?
Yeah, well, you know, we're trying to toe some lines here right now.
Yes, that's right. We're journalists. And the great thing is we're going to talk all about this with a comedian. Her name is Nagin Farsad. She's the author of a new book, How to Make White People Laugh. She's the host of the podcast Fake the Nation.
And Gustavo Arellano is joining us. He's the editor of the OC Weekly. He's also the author of the syndicated column Ask a Mexican.
So, Gene, the working title for this podcast was a couple weeks ago when I was thinking about it. A Muslim, that's Nagin, and a Mexican, that's Gustavo, walk into a bar after the election and get drunk with a Puerto Rican
that's
and a brother
you.
From Philly.
That's me.
I'm not sure if that title works anymore.
Oh, no, no. I think we should all still go for a drink.
Yes, I was supposed to bring a flask. I forgot the flask. And I'm not sure our guests are even in the mood to laugh or make us laugh.
They better get on
today.
It because because I think we all need it.
No pressure, Nagin and Gustavo. Welcome to Code Switch.
What's
Hi,
up,
guys?
How are
Let's
y'all doing?
Laugh.
Let's
laugh. Good, good. I am more excited than I have been in a long, long time because
Wait.
Now is a time to fight and have fun while we fight.
Wow, you recover so quickly, Gustavo, because I'm still in full weep. I mean, they've outfitted this recording studio with a couple of boxes of tissue, so thank you for that, because I am literally going through it. But you're fast, picking up yourself up and dusting yourself off. Wow.
Well, maybe because I was already in the middle of the belly of the beast, so I don't know where y'all were on election night, but I got to hang out with the Republican Party in Orange County, California.
What was
that
like?
And that makes you feel good?
I could be more philosophical, but I'm not going to. But that, this idea that once you see right into the belly of the beast, you get a revelation and you see a path forward, that's exactly what I saw. So I was hanging out with people who, when Megyn Kelly from Fox News was on the screen, they were flipping her off. They were calling her a traitor and no friend to patriots. I'm not even going to repeat what they were saying about Hillary. Oh, besides, you know, lock her up. And what I hope that we not get discouraged. I know it's horrible. Oh my God, we have a small-handed man as the president-elect of the United States. But it is time, folks. It is time, Raza, and all my brothers and sisters. It is time to get down.
I mean, what's really shocking is that you brought up something, which is that we have to look to people like Megyn Kelly to be our new heroes or something. Like, they're now the adults in the room. People like Paul Ryan. Like, I'm hanging my hopes on him to not get rid of my Obamacare, because otherwise I won't have coverage. That's some material I'm working on. I won't be insured once they take away Obamacare material.
Nagin, you had to tell jokes last night, right? To a live audience?
Yeah. But that was, like, in a world where, like, I thought Hillary was winning. Like, this was at 8:30 p.m. And I was like, guys, like, wait until the West Coast returns come in. This is fine. Like, what I'm really concerned about is, like, how Hillary Clinton is going to up her pantsuit game. Because she has been one-upping herself on pantsuits this entire time. And there's, I mean, there's only so many places you can go with the pantsuit. And now I was just, like, doing straight, like, happy Hillary Clinton bits. And that was fun. And then the world changed.
Yeah, talk about that. I mean, I really want to know how you feel.
Well, I mean, here's what I think has happened. You know, we sort of, like, have been deluding ourselves that things are great. You know, like, in 2008, we elected a black president, right? He had this really diverse cast. Like, Mindy Kaling got her own show. Like, Kevin Hart was selling out stadiums. Like, Beyonce is a feminist. And we're like, you know what? This is kind of great. Like, we're doing really well. But it turns out we were just, you know, putting lipstick on a pig only to find out that the pig is racist. And now president of the United States. And here's what I think has happened. Is like we, in that kind of like deluding ourselves, let the bigots build up. Sort of like when you don't look at your inbox for a while and then you're just like, oh, I'll get to my emails later. And then you look at your emails, you're like, oh my God, how do I have 20,000 bigots in my inbox? Like that's what it has been. We have not been checking our emails and now it's out of control. Like it's owning us.
Speaking of shocking, Gustavo, 33% of the Latino vote went for Trump.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask a Mexican right now. I'm asking you to tell me, how did that happen?
There's nothing shocking about that at all.
There's
okay, I'm not even counting the Cubanos down in Florida. All Latinos always love to blame anything bad about Latinos. Oh, blame it on the Cubanos from Miami. You know, anti-Castro, blah blah blah. Look, let's not pretend that a lot of Latinos, especially males and especially immigrants, they like the caudillo. In other words, the mythical man on horseback, the dictator, the autocrat, and it's been all across Latin America. That's in our blood, and so a lot of Latinos, they love the fact that, you know, at least in their mind, I'm not saying this, I definitely don't believe it, but, oh, you know, Donald Trump tells it like it is. Donald Trump, you know, says the truth. You know, he doesn't kowtow to political correctness. Hillary Clinton is, you know, the opposite of that. A lot of Latinos like that authoritarian figure, for better or for worse. And on our end, those of us, you know, on the left side of the Latino spectrum, we know this, but like what we were saying earlier, it's like a lot of people have been living in a delusion for the past 8 years, thinking everything's hunky-dory, blah, 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 blah. No, it's not. It never has been. And while we have all been celebrating, and, you know, Mindy Kaling, God bless her, and Beyonce at the Super Bowl and whatever, the other side was seething, building, building, and here we are now.
A few weeks ago, when all these numbers, all the poll numbers said that Latinos were going to break hard for Hillary Clinton, were you sort of like, nah, I don't buy that at all? You thought that this was possible?
Oh, no. I knew a lot of Latinos were going to go out in force and vote against her. But this is actually what I've been advocating in my column. It's like, hey, Raza, it's all good that we're in the Southwest, but don't live in the Southwest anymore. We're just building up a little empire. Go off to Kentucky. Go off to Montana. Go off to New Hampshire. That is real Reconquista. You be the swing vote in that state. Okay, so cool. We got a new Latina senator, first ever Latina senator in the state of Nevada, taking over for Harry Reid. Yeah, that's cool. But like, that's not good enough. That's not going to swing elections. Like, we're able to win for Obama against Romney in 2012, but in the face of something like this, like, oh gosh, my cousin who I told moved to Pennsylvania in the middle of Pennsylvania and open a taqueria and become a millionaire, he could have been that decisive swing vote that could have given Pennsylvania to Hillary. Instead, nah, he's in Southgate and here in California. So sad.
And Pennsylvania, we desperately need better Mexican food too, so you know what I mean?
exactly.
I'm thinking about, you know, recrimination. I mean, people of color, you know, allies of people of color. Are we going to start, you know, pointing fingers at each other? You know, there's this big fall off in her share of the black vote due to black men. He won, like as Shireen said.
Yeah, I'm pointing my finger at you, Gene.
Obviously,
let's blame millennials. Come on, let's all blame millennials.
He won a third of the Latino vote, as Shireen just said. Even after calling Mexican immigrants rapists, you know. White women didn't break very hard for Hillary at all. I think they're the only demographic of women that voted for Trump. Do you think there's going to be a lot of, like, bloodletting after this among people who thought they were part of a broader political coalition?
I mean, I just want to say that I think all the Iranians who, for whom we have no statistics, totally voted for Hillary. if they took a break from enriching uranium to go to the voting polls, they would have voted for Hillary. But I think, you know, right now you can be self-hating and you can be bigoted. And that's who brought Trump into power. And I think we need to enter in some sort of like leave no bigot left behind policy and really like not let these people slip through the cracks anymore. Like that, I don't even want to blame Hillary. Like Hillary ran an effective campaign. She was poised. She was presidential. She had policies, actual policies. At no point did Donald Trump actually ever have policies. That's the other thing. So, I mean, another thing we could do if we want to point some fingers is maybe blame the media. The good old story of false equivalence was a big one. And we heard that time and time again.
Oh, no. Donald has a policy. Build a wall. Deport 11 million undocumented folks. Ban Muslims from coming into this country. Those are pretty significant policies there.
True.
But I do think there is going to be a lot of finger pointing. It happened over here in California in 2008 when they passed the anti-LGBT, Prop 8. Mm. Everyone blamed African-Americans and Latinos for voting. And it was actually built on a faulty read of statistics.
Yeah,
but the left, especially LGBT folks, these minorities, they were supposed to be standing with us LGBT folks, and no, they have their conservative politics. That you're going to see a lot of that for months and months to go. But I think it's important on our end. It's like, look, if we really care about this country, if we really value who we are as people of color in this country and what we've done to the United States, we need to get over that fast. We need to have people and say, look, like, it's fine at all to blame people, but meanwhile, the other side's going to be building even more. The whole media wanted to say, like, oh yeah, the GOP's imploding. No, it's the Democrats who imploded. And I just hope that there's good people who are going to be able to stop that.
Has this election cycle made either of you do any self-reflection? Have you had to interrogate any of your own, biases, your own assumptions about racism and sexism? You know, who's on your team, who's not on your team?
Unfortunately, as a reporter here in Orange County, where we cover the other side and we also go against ineffectual Democratic Party leaders locally, I'm not surprised by this at all. And if anything is actually upsetting me, it's how much our side lives in a bubble. So, going back to what the past 8 years, what we've seen is good, we've deluded ourselves and just sort of, had blinders to what was going on around us. I'm not surprised. Way too many people of my friends are. In Spanish, we have a saying, ponte las pilas, put on your batteries, like be alert and do something about it. We all have to ponernos las pilas, straight up.
All right, y'all, we're going to take a real quick break here. When we come back, more with our guests Gustavo Arellano and Negin Farsad. And what is up with all this Islamophobia?
Seriously, what's up with that?
I don't know. Anyway, this is Code Switch.
Let's take a moment to thank and share a message from our sponsor, LearnVest. Did you know the average indebted American household has over $16,000 in credit card debt? And 31% of Americans have zero retirement savings. The good news is, LearnVest is here to help. LearnVest is redefining financial planning by making it affordable and accessible to everyday Americans. When you work with LearnVest, you tell them what you want to accomplish with your money, and they'll create a customized financial plan to help you get there. To see a financial plan and get a $50 credit, go to learnvest.com/codeswitch.
Are you a fledgling music nerd who wishes you knew more about what's out there? The All Songs Considered podcast from NPR Music might fix that. All Songs is NPR's music discussion and discovery podcast. Bob Boylan and Robin Hilton share the best of what's new and up and coming in music, including an extended conversation with Justin Vernon, frontman of Bon Iver. Find lots of songs to fall in love with All Songs Considered, every Tuesday on the NPR One app and at npr.org/podcasts. And now back to a Muslim and a Mexican walk into a bar after the election to chop it up with a Puerto Rican and a brother from Philly. Our guests are Gustavo Arellano and Negin Farsad. Negin, top of mind for me right now, and maybe it is because I am part Iranian, my father is Muslim, etc., is Islamophobia. What's going to happen with it? Where is it going to go? Are we still going to have to live with it for the next 4 years.
You know, it's interesting because as a comedian, I've traveled the country a lot. And, you know, one of the things I did in 2011, 2012, I made a movie called The Muslims Are Coming, where I rounded up a bunch of Muslim American comedians. And we went around to like the red states and we did stand up and we called the shows The Muslims Are Coming. And a lot of people came out confused, but a lot of people came out to laugh. And it was a really remarkable experience. That movie is available on iTunes, you know, if you need to.
Download it now.
Muslim antidote. To these elections. But the thing is like I was out there and what I found over and over again was that people just hadn't met any Muslims. And here I was, you know, 5'3", dressed like a cartoon character and like a girl who just probably seems utterly unintimidating to anyone. And so they were willing to talk to me. People, I would approach people in the middle of a town square. I would approach people on their way to work or whatever. And I found that it's not that people are just racist. It's just that people just don't know any better. It's that people don't get the same kind of information. If you are given one narrative and it is saturating the media that, like, Muslims are violent or whatever, or that Mexicans are trying to take your job and they're rapists, like, that's the narrative that you're going to know. And so that's what you're going to vote with. So it's really not it's not an issue of, like, I was hopeful then. I knew that there were, like, that we had a bigotry problem. I mean, I met a lot of the people who had that problem, but I was hopeful because I felt like with every person I met that there was like a small portion of them that was like melting at like, well, you know, this girl's kind of fun. And she gave me free pastries, which we did at every tour stop. We went with cupcakes. We wanted to be, you know, mainstream and build a bridge.
I hope I had rose water, though.
And cardamom. but like, yeah, I mean, you know, that was the goal was to kind of know, to meet people where they were. And I feel like if we do that, they will come around. It's not natural for people to just like hate large groups of other people.
I mean, do you really feel that way? I mean, I'm curious as to how you read these results. Is anything other than sort of a rejection of the pluralism that seems to be part of what your work in The Muslims Are Coming and Gustavo, what your work in Ask a Mexican is like trying to do on some level is to sort of advocate for, you know, pluralism in the American project, right?
I really do think this is the last gasp of a certain segment of America, which is a big segment, which is a segment that's frightened to death of pluralism, frightened to death of multiculturalism, frightened to death of people who are not, you know, quote unquote white, and they see that the future of America is not going to be like this. So this is their last, you know, this is their last gasp, but this is their revenge. You know, who's the real prophet in all this? Michael Moore. He called this a long time ago. He said that Trump was going to win because he was reaching those disaffected white folks, working class white folks whose America is not the America they grew up with. Well, okay, it's not. And now this is our America, and our America is going to be the future. So we have to build on that, and we can't lose sight of that. That, you know, unless he starts supporting a lot of people, which unfortunately I think he might, and we're going to fight that as well. The future is ours, you know. And white folks, they're going to have a say in this country as well. Of course, you know, they're going to have beautiful half brown grandkids and whatnot. But we're going to make it happen.
You know, I think Gustavo is totally right. Like, this is the last gasp. Let them have this like last dance, and then we'll take over the dance. Floor. I mean, right now it's really hard because we don't see a sort of silver lining. Like, there's no consolation prize. It's not like you got Donald Trump, but you also get a 4-year free supply of Kind bars, or like I don't know what. You know what I mean? Like, there's just been no. We're not seeing anything right now, so it's really hard. But this is the last gasp, and just numerically speaking, it is impossible for the country to keep going in this direction.
I mean, I'm always the person who's like, I'm surprised by your optimism, but I'm surprised at this, like, assumption that this is the last gasp. I mean, whiteness is so central to the construction of like, American identity. And it is central to the idea of, like, the constraints of the imagination of the American project. Like, the thing that's sort of frustrating about our project, frankly, is, like, one of the things that we have to do all the time at Code Switch is be like, and we try not to do this, but we have to, like, start from the position that we might have to make the argument for our humanity somewhere in the conversation we're having, that it is not a given. We have to, like, attend to the fears and concerns and questions of white people before we can even get to the sort of, the, like, stuff that requires, like, real imagination. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm just, I don't know, man. Like, I feel like this idea that stuff is a given, that, like, this paroxysm of, you know, whatever is an outlier, I think is dangerous to think about it that way. I just think it's really seductive to be like, oh, just the momentum, the demographic momentum will change all this. Nah, man, that's not that. I don't think that. And I definitely don't think that after last night.
Yeah.
The Latino vote was supposed to deliver Hillary her win, right?
Exactly.
Demographic movements and
damn Cubans.
I left my apartment this morning and like in tears, and my neighbor was also walking out, and he's this like 40 something white guy, and we just looked at each other, we're both weeping, and then we start hugging, no words. And I was like, see, this like, you know, 40 something white guy is the like mythical white guy that everyone's worried about what they think and what they're going to do and how they're controlling us and how they're controlling our female bodies. And there are these white guys that just aren't like that.
That live in New York City.
New York City.
And Los Angeles.
Okay, but like...
And Chicago.
I'm going to spread this guy's DNA to Michigan, Florida, Pennsylvania.
That sounds nasty. Are you calling for a great migration of brown people out into the...
Well, that's what Gustavo was saying.
Oh, my
gosh. That's what I said. New Hampshire, here we come.
But what if they're not listening at all? I mean, we were talking about how... Speaking of silos, Nagin, you know, Fox News, there's that silo. There's, you know, possibly there's the MSNBC silo. I'll keep NPR out of it. But how are we having these conversations if we're just listening to the people that we want to listen to, the people that we agree with? I feel like that with Code Switch. I mean, isn't the idea, yes, to have these conversations and to, I don't know, maybe change some people's minds, but I don't know if those people are even listening.
Right. Have they self-selected out of these conversations in the first place?
I think when we talk about our silos, like one of the things that has bothered me this past year is people lionizing John Oliver. And I like John Oliver. I think he's absolutely hilarious. Mm-hmm. But everyone who was saying, oh, he's so brilliant or whatever, I was telling people like, other better reporters have been reporting on this for years, but because he's doing it from the left and he's doing it like, you know, he's only preaching to the choir. That's not going to be effective at all. And Oliver was not effective. He did not win any elections for us. He did nothing other than make people feel good about themselves. And I think that's one thing that at least those of us who are in media or in comedy have to do. And I think, you know, a tour about Muslims going out, that is brave. You are going into the belly of the beast and you're making people laugh. And I really think at the end that, I mean, I do think hearts and minds are changed that way, but we have to go to the other side and get at them.
Yeah, I think of like we definitely need to meet people where they are, and that's part of the problem. I think with a lot of, you know, this kind of like quote unquote left wing media, is that we don't necessarily go to where they are, and I think that's something that we should do. But I'm actually still encouraged. You know, you got to look at something like, you know, marriage equality. And if you had said to me 10 years ago we're gonna have marriage equality, I would have been like, you're nuts. Like, like middle America hates gay people. That's not happening. You know. But you know what? I think the biggest force in getting marriage equality was A, friends of gay people who are straight. So allies, get your allies. And then B, culture. I mean, if we think that Will and Grace didn't have some kind of role to play in us loving, you know, like a gay character on television and then equating that with something like humanity, we'd be wrong. If we think Ellen had nothing to do with it, I mean, we'd be wrong. Like, I think that culture has this effect on people where if you come into someone's living room, and you're relatable and you're adorable and you're whatever it is.
I mean, I think listening to your point, I mean, there's this weird paradox here, right? You're saying we should go out into the world, that people of color should go out in the world and have more interactions with white folks, and then they will become more familiar with us. And that seems to be like the story of marriage equality in a lot of ways, in that, like, you know, people can wrap their minds, or at least can like imagine a world in which they might have a child. One of their children might be queer, right?
Yeah.
Might be LGBTQ. But people don't live in a world in which their kids even go to school with black kids. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or like even go to school with Latino kids. And I think like the idea that we're going to be...
Was it just all too much, Gene?
What'd you say?
I just feel like, was it all too much change in a short period of time? Marriage equality, a black president, transgender bathrooms, you know, NFL players putting their knees down.
Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter. Was it just like, oh my gosh, this is too much? Like, who are we? This is disorienting.
But the thing, and this goes back to the thing though, is like, while we're trying to figure out like how white people feel about this stuff, these are real people's lives we're talking about on the other side of it, right? I mean, DACA is going to have consequences for thousands of people, right?
Hundreds like, of thousands, yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of people, right? And emboldened police departments, right? Like using the law and order rhetoric of the late 80s and early 90s, that's going to have consequences for communities of color, right? Like all the runoff of the anxiety that white folks feel is going to fall on people of color. I don't know what to do about that.
And can I say something to like my fellow people of color in like how to approach this? I think, you know, and also to your point, Shireen, about it, maybe there was just too much too soon, that sometimes our movements can be alienating. And one of the things that I learned when I was, you know, people always ask me, like, what, when you're on the road, like, what's some of the craziest things you see? And I think some of the craziest things I see is when people feel safe enough to say to me, ask me questions like, why do you call yourself Iranian American? Why can't you just call yourself American American? Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of question that I think someone would just call racism, bigotry, like, you know, throw this guy, Twitter rage. And to me, that's not, this is not a bad question. This is an honest question. And I think we need to recognize that people have honest questions and stuff they don't understand. And they're not asking because they are, you know, that because they're trying to be racist. So I think that's something that we have to be careful of. And I think we can bring a lot more people in the fold if we are.
And we're going to leave it right there. Gustavo Arellano is joining us from Irvine, California. If you don't know where that is, Google it. And Negin Farsad is in New York City. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Gracias.
De nalgas.
Ah, right. That's fun.
All right, y'all. That's our show. We want to hear from you, as always. Please email us at codeswitch@npr.org. Follow us on Twitter at @NPRCodeSwitch. You should definitely, definitely subscribe to our podcast wherever fine podcasts can be found or streamed.
Walter Ray Watson and Rund Abdel Fattah produced this episode. Our editorial assistant is Leah Donella, and we had original music by Ramtin Arablouei.
A shout out to the rest of the Code Switch family, Adrian Florido, Karen Grigsby-Bates, Kat Chow. Our editors this week are Barry Hardiman, Keith Woods, and Ali McAdam.
I'm Jean Demby.
And I'm Shireen Marisol Meraji.
Be easy.
Peace.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them right inside the cell. This approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. More at DanaFarber.org/everywhere.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as the Black experience, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.